Good evening, everybody. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the last of our inaugural lecture series in this present academic year. Tonight, it's my special pleasure to introduce Tek Yong Eng from the Business School. So for those of you who don't know, Tek is Professor of Marketing and Director of the Centre for Business for Research in Management at the University here in the Business School. Gained his first degree from University of Surrey, Masters and PhD from the University of Manchester. And his research areas can be divided into three areas: entrepreneurship, marketing, innovation, and finally supply chain management. And I guess we'll hear about all of those three in the course of the talk this evening. Tek has published widely in these areas in some of the top journals. I'll mention just a few: Industrial Marketing Management, Journal of Marketing Management, Journal of Supply Chain Management, etc. And this evening he will give as I said, the last in the present series of inaugural lectures, Marketing in Network Environments. So, over to you, Tek.
Thank you, Nick. First of all, welcome to the Executive Business Center, and welcome to Bournemouth University. Thank you for taking the time, you know, to spend your evening, and some of you must be tired, you know, to listen to another lecture. You probably fall asleep. Yeah. So I'll try to make it a bit exciting and try to excite you a bit about my research. And basically what I'm going to talk about is marketing in network environments. I'm going to summarize a bit about what I mean by networks and networks in marketing. Firstly, networking is prevalent in everyday's daily lives, in our activities and so on. But mostly in business and in consumer marketing, networking is more about relationship development, relationship management, and trying to get customers to become loyal, and also to help businesses as well to develop and to increase their revenue. And also networking, from a personal viewpoint, networking could be, for example, like LinkedIn, yeah, the website, the internet. It could be like social media networking for personal use. And networking in business networks, we talk about connected exchange relationships. And in business network, like network theory, we know that it exists, you know, a long time ago by sociologists, you know, social network theory. They talk about networks in 1930s, and they conceptualize networks in terms of power balance between buyer and supplier, or between A and B and participants in a particular business network, in order to leverage some kind of advantage in using power. But more recently, in the 80s and in the late 80s, you know, business researchers, mainly based in Scandinavia as well as North America, they talk about business networks from the viewpoint of interdependence, from the viewpoint of competition as well as cooperation. Yeah, so you got this concept like co-opetition, for example. So networks has become more diffuse in the sense that you talk about interdependency rather than hierarchical control. And then network organizations is another concept that spun from network economy, from the use of internet. And it's also about mechanisms being used in networks in order to help organizations to be flexible. Yeah, using communication tools and ICT in order to help organizations to be responsive to consumer demands, to changes in the marketplace and so on. So to put simply, networks is just, you know, when individuals interact, when business organization interacts, and when human beings interact. Yeah. So I hope everybody gets the notion of networks, so we can go into what networks research I've been working on. Why networks? You know, the significance of networks in marketing. We know one of the central concepts of marketing is always about customer is the king, customer is always right. Yeah. So we want to talk about networks in marketing because that's the way companies can actually expand their customer base. Yeah? Being customer focused, yeah, being customer focused is central for a lot of companies in order to survive, as well as in order to grow business revenue. Network is also important because of market intelligence. Market intelligence is central for networks because you gather information about the markets, not only located within the firm boundaries, but also outside industries, global business environments, and so on. Marketing and networks are also related because marketing, based on research again, is about integrator of market information. When I say integrator of market information, is that marketing flows from top, from the cultural viewpoint, right to the bottom, where salespeople, sales personnel actually interact with people. So marketing has a face-to-face interaction with customers. Therefore, marketing is not just about from the marketing functions, and marketing function or marketing people are concerned about marketing, but it's also across organization. That's why organization-wide practice is where marketing sits in a company. It talks about the influence of marketing because you need to adopt the culture of marketing. Customer is always right, for example. Yeah. Okay, I'm going to move to the academic side of it. Yeah, we talked about practical significance in the last slide. The theoretical underpinnings of research in networks. Based on a lot of research, for example, for marketing academics, it will be about market orientation. And market orientation is about gathering of information, dissemination of information, and being responsive to changes in the environment. Excuse me. So market orientation is the foundation for networks in terms of trying to acquire new resources, to acquire new customers, and so on. So market orientation is the cultural perspective that we are talking about. So in terms of theoretical underpinnings for networks, we can view networks from three perspectives. And this will cover the basis of my research that I'm going to present later about some of my papers, which is based on networks. The first one is about network structure. The second one is about network governance. And the last one is about network mechanisms. I will touch on each of these network perspectives using the theoretical perspective for network in order to contribute to the literature in terms of empirical findings. The last one is about strategic orientation. The significance of strategic orientation is because marketing is not just about a marketing function, as I said earlier. Marketing is also about strategic orientation because it encompasses competitor orientation, and it also encompasses innovation, where firms actually innovate and be entrepreneurial when it comes to acquiring resources and developing a strategy. My views on marketing. These are my personal views on marketing. It might be different from the textbooks. Customers are not always are also irrational. They are not always rational. If you look at what most textbooks would say about, especially in economics textbook, users or consumers are always rational. So I would say customers are not irrational, because you can model their behavior by changing their perceptions. You can actually communicate using certain tools and certain ways to actually influence their perceptions about your products, for example, developing brands and so on. Secondly, I'd like to say demand is created. There's no two variables view of marketing, supply and demand, the economics view of marketing, where you need to achieve optimum point where demand is equal to supply. Therefore, that's the price you can charge to consumers. My view is different, but demand is created because marketing communication, again, will lead the way in which, we can influence markets. And using marketing networks as well, you can actually influence users in the marketplace. Strategy is largely controllable. Yeah, this is, again, my view. Based on a lot of marketing textbooks, you will say that strategy is uncontrollable. That's why I start chapter 2 about marketing environment. And you do all the SWOT analysis, you do all the past analysis in order to adapt your strategy to the environment. But the way I look at it is largely controllable. You actually adapt your environment to your strategy. So optimum mindset can be detrimental because we are operating in a dynamic marketplace. Yeah, it keeps changing. So you try to achieve stability and equilibrium mindset is short term, I think. Yeah, because based on that research, some of my papers later I'm going to talk about, you see the changes in the marketplace, companies need to be dynamic. They need to change, and they need to adopt more reactive and responsive strategy in order to be at the forefront of competitive advantage. Marketing is also strategic. A lot of people have a misunderstanding about marketing. When they think about marketing, they think about 4 P's. They think about promotion. They think about changing the price. They think about reacting to competitors, packaging, and so on. But marketing is strategic, in my view, because marketing is a cultural perspective, as I said, from market orientation, because it influences the way human resources, finance, production, and the various departments in an organization in terms of how you actually use market intelligence, use market information to be responsive to market needs. This is just an overview of my research. What I'm going to do is that I'm going to talk about some of my papers that are actually published, and based on empirical evidence, I'm going to offer some cumulative insights about what marketing networks are all about, and then I'm going to talk about some of the implications. So the first one is about customer portfolios. Second one is about cross-relational impact. Third one is about cross-functional orientation, and the last one about network organization and coordination mechanism. The move to the first one is about the concept of customer portfolio analysis. This is based on my PhD, mainly about customer portfolio analysis. I have at least three or four papers which is based on customer portfolio concept, talking about analytical tools. This is a strategic management tools for analyzing customers. A lot of businesses, for example, based on my research, they don't really know the cost of serving their customers, for example. They don't really know the strategic significance in terms of revenue that you can bring in from future customers. And also, you don't really know the kind of capabilities that you require to serve your customers. So a lot of businesses, based on my research in the financial services sector, as well as in the consultancy industry, most businesses, they don't really work out a strategy to develop a customer portfolio. So one of the reasons, because the influence of marketing textbooks, a lot of marketing textbooks, for example, if you turn to chapter 6 or 7, they have strategic management tools like BCG consultant, BCG Consulting Group portfolio metrics, yeah, the 2x2 one, the cash cow, docs, and so on, question mark. Yeah. A lot of businesses, they try to adapt the product-centric approach to customers. Yeah, that is the wrong approach, because when you look at a product-centric approach, you can't achieve optimum product or resource allocation in the context of customers, because customers are dynamic. Yeah, customer needs keep changing. But when you develop your product, you have full control of it. You can develop the type of products, and based on what consumers buy, you change your product portfolio. But in a sense of, if you are trying to develop a customer portfolio is a dynamic mixture of customer, where there are different types of customers, and you need to manage the relationships as well as grow the relationship in terms of leveraging complementary skills, complementary strengths, as well as developing competitive advantage. So due to these changes, I introduce a resource-based view to look at internal capabilities of firms in terms of managing their customer relationships. So based on the resource-based view, there are different dimensions to look at. For example, resources that are difficult for your competitors to imitate, resources that are very rare, resources that are unique, and also resources that you cannot easily trade in the marketplace. So using these resources, as well as the industry factors, which is about market share, size, competitive intensity in the environment, scope, and all the variables, I carry out research which is based on four services industries: the high-tech industry, the financial services industry, the food service industry, and the consultancy industry, and show that the influence of internal capabilities, which is based on capabilities like resources, experience, skills, brand, product attributes, they have more significant influence on your ability to create competitive advantage. So there's impact on firm performance and value creation. And networks, in fact, when I say networks, networks are relationships, not only the first-tier relationship, which is the focal relationship between firm A and firm B, but sometimes you have indirect relationship, which could be tied to firm B, it's like C, D, and therefore there are many relationships that can actually impact on your control and dependence in terms of access to resources, like your ability to serve a particular market or your ability to actually develop competitive advantage. Moving on, the second phase of my research is about cross-relational impact of strategy in networks. When I talk about cross relational impact. I refer to different levels of relationship and that how that affect the focal firm. Yeah, for example, firm A is relating to firm B. Yeah, but there are other relationships that tie into firm B and firm A at the same time, which could be part of the supply chain or which could be part of firms in the same industry. Yeah, changes or non-action or non-strategic actions by firm located in C or D within the network could actually impact on the resources of firm A and B. A recent example is like, for example, like Toyota, the recall of the cars is because one of the suppliers and the quality checks, the coordinations of different suppliers could actually impact on the final product. This is how, you know, there are cross-relational impacts in terms of changes in the resources, changes in the technology that they use to manufacture the car, and also quality control system. So I try to analyze cross-relational impacts, but there are methodological shortcomings, obviously, because there are very few analytical or statistical tools available to look at permutations and also to look at fluid relationships that occur in networks. So therefore, I use some technique which is developed in the literature of social network to look at some of the relationships for high-tech industries and to look at their cross-relational impact at four levels: the exchange level between two parties, the diet level within A, B, and C indirect relationships, a portfolio level, exchange relationship which includes a mixture of key customers that a firm actually deals with, and also industry relationship beyond a portfolio, beyond industry boundary, or beyond a certain market. So in terms of the cross-relational impact, I found that network capabilities and managing relationships can actually enhance access to key resources in terms of how firms can actually influence their competitive advantage if they got more influence in the networks, if they have more understanding about what's going on in the networks, and also if they have a relationship which they deal with outside their own firm boundaries. For example, a lot of companies nowadays, they seek competitive advantage by mergers and acquisition in the same industry, by horizontal alliance instead of vertical alliance. Yeah. Next phase of research is about cross-functional orientation in supply chain management. I look at the context of supply chain management because it provides, you know, a focused research in terms of inter-firm relations. When you look at the supply chain, you look at the process where products are, raw materials are actually acquired, they are manufactured, and then they are distributed or they pass on to retailers or wholesalers before they reach the end consumer. So you provide a good setting in which, you know, research can be conducted. So working across organizational functions, I look at the behavioral aspects of networks in terms of the norms and also in terms of the behavioral side of like mutual trust, knowledge sharing, participative culture, loosely coupled relationships, open communications, and cooperative behavior by firms. So there are a lot of firms, for example, when a lot of studies in the past, when they look at competitive advantage, they look at the structure of the industry, market share, competition, and size. And also they look at some moderators like technology, dynamism, and market dynamism. But in this research, I look at the behavioral side. So when I introduce the research about network, I look at three perspectives, one of which is behavioral aspect, which is about governance. So in terms of mutual trust, knowledge sharing, these are all behavioral aspects of relationship management, which deals with governance. So when I found that testing some of the well-established constructs in terms of mutual trust and knowledge sharing, I found that impact on they actually impact on supply chain responsiveness and firm performance. Firms that actually look after the mutual behavioral development with their key partners in terms of sharing their knowledge, in terms of developing mutual trust and cultivating cooperative behavior in a firm, they are more likely to achieve supply chain responsiveness as well as enhance their firm performance. Then finally, I look at the mechanisms. Yeah? As I said earlier, there are structure, behavioral side, which is about governance, and then about mechanism of network. These papers have been published in the context of high-tech industries because most of the mechanism about network organizations are essentially about communication tools, yeah, ICT. They break down the barriers of organization structures. Yeah. So network drivers, I look at the potential of using network drivers, using the internet for value creation and innovation. I identify four network drivers: open systems, virtual channels, multi-user engagement, and extended customizability. These are all examined in the context of high-tech firms where they are able to leverage the internet in order to connect with firms like startup, new venture startup, new companies that actually develop their ability to link and to generate innovations. They rely on open system, which is based on a platform which they are able to share knowledge. For example, using similar type of software like JavaScript, yeah, their company can share and write compatible programs and exchange knowledge. Virtual channels, which is allowing companies to link with different suppliers. And for example, Microsoft actually worked with a lot of venture capitalists when they developed the Xbox, the new Xbox. Yeah? And they worked with over 3,000 suppliers or programmers and using the virtual channels to actually exchange knowledge. And multi-user engagement as well, the ability of the internet and technology to engage different suppliers in the supply chain, and so different programmers and different users. So that is an enhanced capability in terms of using the internet in network organization. Extended customizability, because a lot of firms, then when they use the internet, they can develop scripts, and using scripts that, like filtering script used by Amazon.com, and also some of the scripts that are developed for weblog analysis, they can actually develop automated personalization tools that can respond automatically without actually requesting or using a personnel to actually work and replying emails on a one-to-one basis, but using JavaScript to write customizable, personalized response to customers. So all these technologies are actually enabled by the internet and also using the ICT communication tools. There are multiple sources of competitive advantage. And based on this paper, it advanced some of the transaction cost theory and the resource-based theory by looking at some of the technological side of network organization. In summary, one aspect of research when it comes to networks, I would like to say there are dynamic nature when it comes to networks. It is difficult for firms to manage the networks if they try to view networks in terms of achieving stability, yeah, and also in terms of achieving optimum equilibrium of demand and so on. And reconceptualizing the environment, I'll show later about reconceptualizing the environment in terms of the business networks. And there are multiple units of analysis when it comes to networks, because it is not only in relation to the industry structure. It could be about governance or behavioral variables, and it could be about coordination mechanisms. And also you may span industry boundaries and also market boundaries, if not restricted to a particular industry or firm level. And there are also intangible variables or resources when we talk about mutual trust, we talk about exchange of knowledge between firms, cooperative behavior, and so on. But there are norms that you can actually develop within a network. And as we know, some of the literature in management will talk about how norms actually bestow legitimacy. Yeah. So in terms of dynamic strategies, of networks, it is actually inconsistent with the static strategy models. For example, Porter's model. A lot of you will probably be familiar with Porter's generic strategies. Yeah. And a lot of you is also familiar with the concept of stuck in the middle. You know, if you choose two of the strategic generic strategies, you get stuck in the middle. But I would argue against that. It is inconsistent with a static strategy. Companies can use hybrid strategy. They don't have to choose one of the strategy. They don't have to be cost leadership only. They can use cost leadership and differentiate. One example is the Waitrose supermarkets. Yeah, we know about the Waitrose supermarket. And last week, the chief executive actually talked on Radio 4. Yeah, he talks about how they target the premium market at the same time offering value to customers. So this is different from Porter's model. The second is about networks, supply chains, and the ICT create new opportunities because of the coordination mechanisms. Yeah, due to the coordination mechanism, we know there are ways to leverage competitive advantage, not restricted to industry, but also in supply chain and in ICT. And there are also behavioral wearables, behavioral wearables that can actually influence your competitive advantage when it comes to relationship development. For example, mutual trust, trust between partners. And that is a social competence as well, like relational capabilities. There should be more explicit consideration of consumer demand in business marketing. Because whenever we talk about business marketing, we detach the consumer because the business marketing deal with the supply chain and the upstream activities in business. But there should be more explicit consumer consideration in order to integrate that consumer changes in consumer behavior and to be sensitive and able to anticipate consumer change, consumer behavior and changes in marketplace. I talk about the environment. Earlier, I said the environment is largely controllable. One of the reasons, because when you talk about the environment in networks, the environment is actually enacted. Yeah? You actually create the environment. For example, at a personal level, if you set up a Facebook, you decide who you want to connect to. Yeah? You create your own social networks. In the business sense, it's the same. You create your business environment by allocating resources. Who do you want to connect to? Who do you want to do business with? Yeah? So it's the same. Business environment are not entirely uncontrollable, and it is enacted by interaction because businesses are able to develop, allocate resources, to target certain customers, to develop more products for certain markets, and so on. So there are multiple connected and interconnected actors in the environment. So it makes it complicated in terms of networks. And therefore, also firms are able to develop relationships and they connect these relationships. And it is this enacted environment, I would argue, that have more implication for your competitive advantage than the way we look at environment by analyzing SWOT, PES, and SLAM, all the typical industry structure models. And then there are collective actions. Collective actions as in terms of alliances, your partnerships, your community programs. Your networks are not only restricted to one company as in your customers, but also you engage your community. You have to do something which is corporate, socially acceptable in the marketplace. So therefore, your networks is about collective actions, how you're being perceived in the marketplace. And you can actually manage that and also develop the kind of perceptions and changes in the marketplace. Yeah. And technology is an enabler. Yeah, I like to say that technology is an enabler because you can actually connect to more organizations using technology. Yeah. And also technology as part of the internet, for example, allow firms to conduct virtual businesses or develop virtual channels, develop virtual capabilities. Multi-level analysis. Yeah. The problem with multi-level analysis is that we move from the firm level to industry level and to networks. And because nowadays, most businesses are interconnected. Yeah. The supply chain of most businesses is global. Take, for example, at Tesco and Sainsbury's. If you go to Tesco or you go to Sainsbury's, you can find products that are sourced from all over the world. Yeah. This is the way there are global pressures in terms of markets are interconnected. And somewhere in the supply chain, it actually impacts on value creation. It actually impacts on your supply chain responsiveness. And there are limitations when we look at businesses, like in the past. We look at a lot of organizations. They adopt the view of strategic business units. They separate their business. They concentrate on core business as one strategic business unit. And I think that is not a sustainable model in the long term, because most businesses are interconnected, and especially when it comes to offering value within one organization, there are cross-functional impact on performance. In terms of network orientation as well, rather than firm-level concepts, because as I said earlier, there are a lot of effects in the networks, not only between immediate relationships, but also indirect relationships. At the moment, there are limitations. Limitation with the analytical techniques for multi-level analysis as well as cross-relational analysis. Therefore, in terms of empirical evidence, based on substantiated evidence, there are very limited or very few studies that actually look at cross-relational impact. But in the industry, it actually happened. In the businesses, there's actually some businesses actually look at areas where they can actually develop competitive advantage by understanding their network effects. The importance of relational assets. Another key findings from the cumulative insights. The importance of personal relationships. The importance of social capital in mobilizing resources as well in gaining access to resources. I mean, how often we read about entrepreneurs, for example, when they first start up their business, they rely on their friends. They rely on their relatives. They rely on people that they are, close with because of trust. Because of the ability to mobilize some of the resources, because of your contacts. So the social competence is also a key variable more recently in the literature of entrepreneurship. And relationship management, obviously, is the underpinning from which you can actually develop personal relations as well as relational assets. And then indirectly connected relation as well from dissimilar networks. When I say dissimilar networks, it means that it can be another industry, it can be a different industry where you can actually develop new products. You can actually leverage more competitive advantage. By that, I mean there is more non-redundant knowledge. For example, like retailers, they like to expand horizontally to find out opportunities in the financial services industry, to find out opportunities in the clothing industry. We've seen Asda, we have seen Tesco, they're doing the same thing in order to expand their portfolio, but finding networks that are actually dissimilar in terms of non-redundant networks. So what are the managerial implications? So my take on this would be like structural hierarchies are actually buffers. We know this. We know this from 1930s when people start writing about management. Structural hierarchies, they actually slow down the information so that people can absorb the impact from the environment. When they absorb the impact on the environment, they can organize themselves systematically. So they are actually buffers. They slow you down in terms of being responsiveness. And we know a lot of IT companies, for example, they don't have structure. They have one flat management hierarchy in order to be responsive as well as working in fast and rapid response in the marketplace that constantly change. Organizational structure can inhibit change because it can be a barrier for organizational structure to actually allow change, because one of the main reasons is because you have developed a system. And that system is inherent in your behavior as well as in your path. Because a path dependent, it's more difficult for an organization to change when they have rigid structure, for example. And the flow of information is constantly top-down. And that is also a barrier for a lot of companies when it comes to managing their resources as well as being responsive to the environment. One example is the BT, the British Telecom, as well as the British Airways. They restructured the whole organization in the last 5 or 10 years in order to be more flexible. They removed some of the structure in order to be more responsive. And so that's part of the problem as well. To get rid of middle managers is also a problem because you have structure and it's difficult. And the underlying message behind it is about trying to achieve agility and being responsive in the marketplace. Agile firms are more able to respond to changes in the marketplace. And agile firms are more anticipative in terms of sensitive to changes in the marketplace. And also being responsive in the marketplace, you are able to be ahead of your competitors. For example, like the Apple. When they came up with the iPod, they keep on innovating. Although they got the first mover advantage, they can't keep the first mover advantage because all the competitors are coming up with the same products, but they have to constantly develop new products And that requires responsiveness. Yeah? That requires a system that allows you to do that. And a lot of companies, they are able to develop one product, gain that first mover advantage, and then they become stuck because the system is already there. The system inhibits the change. The routines and the path that have been created in the organization don't allow external forces to actually change the way they work. There will be less opportunity for efficiency gains. There will also be less opportunity for information asymmetry. As we know in the economics literature, we keep on looking for transaction cost advantage. Yeah? And also we keep on looking for efficiency gains. Yeah? But because nowadays we operate in a network environment, you also look at personal relation as assets. You look at networks as coordination mechanism which can generate competitive advantage. So firms that are able to adapt or embrace new technology as well as take advantage of non-efficiency-based type of advantage, they are more able to be successful. And also coordinating collective network capabilities is crucial for long-term success because we know that a lot of assets, supply chains, they may not be located in one country. For example, Dyson have the manufacturing plant in Asia. Yeah? And a lot of companies, they locate themselves, they call themselves international factory. Yeah? They have different manufacturing plants in different locations in order to be responsive as well as in order to gain advantage in certain markets. What about research implications? In terms of research implication, networks pose a lot of methodological challenges. Yeah. It's difficult for researchers to model networks. Yeah. And a lot of researchers are quite reluctant to open to even pry into networks because they know that it is difficult to actually handle the dynamics of networks. But this is essential in terms of advancing knowledge in networks. Marketing insights can draw insights from organizational and network theories. Yeah. Marketing, for example, rely heavily on market orientation. Yeah. I rely heavily on some of the models that are being developed for responding to relationship management based on database marketing and relationship management. But my view is that marketing concepts can actually gain more by looking into organizational learning, for example, by looking into network theory, social exchange network theory, social capital, and also by looking into more dynamic type of theories like resource-based capabilities, dynamic capabilities, and so on. There's the demand for dynamic models. Dynamic models are different from what we can actually find textbooks. Yeah, most of the marketing textbooks talk about Porter's model. Yeah, this Porter's models are static models based on economics thinking, but you need to look at dynamic models which look at organizational learning, for example, yeah, transformative capabilities, yeah, generative and renewal capabilities. Some of the organizational theories can offer a lot of food for thought in terms of trying to develop dynamic models. Likewise, marketing is also quite static in the sense that we look at market orientation, being customer focused, and being competitor focus and interfunctional coordination. That is quite short term as well. If you look at the networks, you don't only look at your customers, but you look at the network actors, network participants. So there are a lot of limitations in terms if you open a network or take the network perspective. So there are potential insight as well from boundary conditions. If you look at boundary conditions in terms of technology applications like digital technology, you can also model different impact on performance and supply chain or responsiveness of a firm. So what is it to take away? Yeah. So I thought, you know, I'd give a slide on about the current economic situation and how you can actually leverage or exploit networks. So we know that the current prospect is quite dire, yeah, in the UK because we got huge public debts in the economy. And we also there will be big cuts in public spending after the general election especially. There will be possible increase in the value-added tax. We know that is coming, and it's for sure. And also we know that from compared to last year, there are more than 20% decrease in the business investment, yeah, as far as business investment is concerned. So the economy is not looking very good. Yeah. Export also have been slow to take off, despite the weakened pounds. Yeah. And we know all these factors paint a picture which is very difficult for firms to navigate in terms of trying to develop competitive advantage. So what happened to organizational strategy or marketing strategy? Then? A lot of firms just sit and wait. You know, they wait. Yeah. But waiting is not the way to advance your business in terms of developing competitive advantage. We know that greater risk also entails greater returns when it comes to strategizing and as well as taking risks. So how can business use this? I mean, this is just based on networks. How can business use the findings in the literature or findings in networks? Network competition is different. They start have to wake up, right? Network competition is different. It's not about industry competition. It's not about firm-to-firm competition. But network competition is how you can gain membership to a particular networks, for example. That's why a lot of business organizations attend exhibition, attend conferences, attend social networking events, businesses, in order to develop some personal relationships or in order to develop business contacts. But at the same time, joining this membership, developing a personal relation has an agenda which is more important in terms of assessing resources, assessing knowledge, and developing collaboration, gaining advantage by developing strategic alliances and so on. So capabilities that reside in networks, capabilities don't reside in firms. Therefore, it's more ambiguous. Yeah? It's more difficult for your competitors to imitate. When it comes to capabilities that actually belong to the network rather than belong to individual firms, you can't imitate overnight. You can't imitate in 6 months. Yeah? It's more difficult to develop their competitive advantage. So therefore, networks offer a much sustainable competitive advantage. And also, firms need to be selective and judicious when it comes to allocation of resources. By selective, I mean when I start the first few slides in my presentation, I talk about most firms do not know the profitability of their customers. Yeah? When it comes to profitability of the customers, like net profit for individual customers, business customers, you work out all your costs. Most firms do not know based on my research. So therefore, if you are selective in terms of allocation of resources, you can target more effectively and use your resources more effectively. And also because the environment is enacted, the environment is controllable, your view of environment is different because you don't think about the environment as something that you constantly have to adapt your strategy, but the strategy adapt to the environment, you know, on the other hand. So you develop your capabilities that actually model the environment. So therefore, you can create value-creating networks. Yeah. One example is the Walmart. Yeah. The Walmart is one of the largest retailers in the world. You use the network organization concept using electronic technology and using the RFID technology in the supply chain, making sure that all the suppliers are equipped with RFID and taking advantage of remote and location-based services. They can actually create the best supply chain in the world. There's no doubt it's the best supply chain in the world. Integrate and leverage technological capabilities. That's the way also for a lot of organizations when it comes to exploiting business networks, because as digital technology allows companies to interact in real time, and also digital technology allow companies to expand to new markets, to enter new markets without actually setting up physical presence. Yeah? And you're also able to respond to some of the queries about from customers and able to develop relationship using technologies without, you know, allocating resources again, which is based on manpower. So what are the strategic implications? So here I want to offer just three strategic implications for organizations. Yeah. The first one is what relationship represent nexus of core competence? And you think about this, yeah, for your companies. What are the relationship, you know, what are the composition of relationships that can actually generate core competence or give you distinctive competitive advantage? And then secondly, what network resources render sustainable competitive advantage? I presented, you know, three aspects of networks: governance, mechanisms, and structure. So what are those aspects of networks that can actually give you competitive advantage? And then you ask yourself the last question: what aspects of business do you grow? Yeah. Are you growing your revenue? Because it's different from growing your market share. Are you growing because you want to develop your new product? It's again different from growing your profitability. Are you growing because you want to become more competitive in new markets? The strategy is different. So a lot of businesses, they state in their vision statement or in their annual reports, we would like to grow by 10% next year. But they are not being specific when they say that. Yeah. And when it comes to operationalizing this type of strategy, you need to look beyond what they want to grow, because that will have resource implications. And especially if you look at the networks, and that will mean also you might not be able to develop any competitive advantage without being calculative and selective in terms of developing your core competence. So what are the strategic options? Earlier I talked about the strategic implications. So how do firms do it? How they can create network core competence? They can identify value-creating networks in existing markets. Yeah? If they identify the value-creating networks in terms of your relationships, yeah? In terms of your technology that you use as a source of competence, in terms of your levels of effects or your relationship with new partners, yeah? Or new markets. The difficulty for a lot of firms is that, when it comes to developing core competence or competitive advantage in networks, they rely on gaining size advantage, gaining market share advantage. But they don't think about like gaining knowledge advantage, gaining personal assets advantage, gaining relational advantage, gaining some trust as an advantage. Yeah, so that's different perspective when it comes to looking at the networks. The second choice is to innovate, to invest in ideas and future technologies. That's more difficult and risky. Yeah? Firms that want to stay ahead in the economy, they have to innovate. And we know from research as well, 50% of the average revenue of most firms come from products that are under 5 years old. Yeah? So companies have to constantly innovate in order to be successful. So innovation is not just a buzzword, but it's something which is embedded in strategy and needs to be embedded in strategy. Lastly, it's about developing specialized capabilities in networks. These specialized capabilities can be your personal relationship, can be your relationships, that the way you manage your relationships, the way you develop trust, and the way you gain commitment from your relationship in practice. Yeah. So you can also develop competitive advantage from having specialized assets that is unique to your location, for example, that's unique to your tradition of the company, like achieving high quality and superior quality. For example, the British Airways got a networks of transatlantic routes. Yeah, that network is very difficult for companies to penetrate. Yeah. But Virgin Atlantic decided to develop transatlantic routes as well because they believe, yeah, or Richard Branson's beliefs, that they can actually offer better services. Yeah. By offering better services, they can actually take a cut from the market share and gain customers from it. So that is the kind of specialized capabilities that we are talking about. So I'm just going to conclude and give you some idea about my ongoing research, because there's still a long way to go for me. Yeah. I'm going to do this. At the moment, I'm working on network capability developments. Yeah. Most of my research is about how companies develop network capabilities. When it comes to networks, I've explored some of the directions in terms of structure, in terms of governance, in terms of network organization. The next step is to look at, if companies can develop network capabilities, what would that process be? If we can shed more light into that process, then we can inform practice, or the practice can inform academics and literature in terms of what is going on in practice, and then I can actually find out more and disseminate that knowledge. Capability perspective on enhancing innovation. I talk about the importance of structure, and the influence of market structure on strategy. Yeah. A lot of the influence is because of the static models that we developed in the 60s or in the 70s. And when I talk about capability perspective, I like to introduce the dynamic models where it is possible for firms to pursue what we call high levels of exploitation and exploration at the same time. or in academic terms, we would like to call organizational ambidexterity. Yeah? And that's when companies can actually leverage their core competence as well as constantly explore new technologies because of the fear of path dependent and the fear of commitment and selective commitment. Companies quite often locked in their behavior when it comes to developing new products. Another aspect of my research is about social responsibility, the importance of companies to realize that the environment is also having an impact on the well-being as well as the profitability of the company because of the perception of the public, because of what you do in the public. Yeah? A lot of companies nowadays have foundations, have trust, yeah? A spin-off from the company to develop some kind of charity works, yeah? To do some kind of charity in order to gain competitive advantage, because that can model perception, create perception, and again, you create demand, yeah, by creating perception. And also I talk about value creation in logistics and distribution. I look at international logistics or supply chain and distribution, especially inbound logistics, where it is quite unique when you compare to outbound logistics or outbound distribution. When I talk about distribution in marketing, a lot of people have a perception like distribution is about place. Distribution is about having your products on the shelf in the supermarkets. Yeah? But if you look at the inbound distribution is also about the flow of products from your suppliers to the retailer and then to your customer. Managing the inbound distribution can have implication for your responsiveness. And the inspiration I get from this study is from Sainsbury's. Yeah. 5 years ago, Sainsbury's had problems when it comes to their supply chain. And they call in some consultants to actually look at their supply chain. And Accenture actually worked with them. And they found one of the problems is that a lot of shoppers are quite frustrated. When they walk into the store, a lot of popular products are not on the shelf. Yeah, because of the distribution. This is inbound distribution. So therefore, I work on inbound distributions. And the research is completed and is due to be published. So that's it for my lecture. And I would like to thank everybody for taking their time and also spending this evening with me. And there will be food, very nice cold buffet. Yeah, and hopefully there are some beer and wines. Yeah, thank you very much.